Well, I would like to add my welcome to all who are here today, and a special welcome to the Scouts. We enjoy and benefit from and are glad for the partnership between First Baptist Church Decatur and Troop 134, and we're so glad to welcome Scouts and families here today, and of course to welcome everyone else as well. So I'm in a, just to give you a little orientation, I'm in a series on things Christians do, and I believe this is the fifth or sixth in the series. It's a series of messages that claim that the Christian faith is not just about a set of beliefs or a casual kind of church going or even a serious kind of church going. It's about a way of life. It's about the way of life that Jesus taught in particular. And so what we have mainly been doing over these weeks since the beginning of the new year has been reflecting on the teachings of Jesus and trying to figure out what practices, what stuff we're supposed to do follows from those teachings. Everybody has had occasion to be challenged at one time or another in this series, and we will all be challenged today as well. So you're listening in on the series. I did think about the Scouts a little bit for this theme of covenant, and so here we go. The New Testament passage of Matthew 5, 31 through 37 is usually treated as two very different, even completely disconnected passages. The first has to do with divorce. The second has to do with swearing oaths. Based mainly on these two passages, the early tradition of the church and much of all of the tradition of the church said don't do either ever. No divorce, no oaths. Well, I'll immediately make it a little more complicated. The divorce teaching had an exception in Matthew, not in Mark, that was taken seriously. It was from Jesus, and it had to be taken seriously. And the exception was, if the spouse committed adultery, then maybe divorce was okay. But otherwise, no. And the oath teaching, as we have it in the text that was read this morning, didn't have any exceptions at all. So for much of Christian history, especially the divorce text, was treated as absolute moral law. The idea, the interpretation was that Jesus is the lawgiver, the new Moses, and that Jesus had prescribed a law against divorce, and so his followers must simply obey no matter what. So for centuries, this was interpreted to mean that no matter how terrible, violent, or dysfunctional a marriage might be, divorce was wrong, except perhaps unless somebody committed adultery. For centuries, many Christians taught this and believed this and practiced this, and some still do today. In fact, many people were sent back into abusive marriages on the basis of this understanding of Matthew 5. And Jesus had equally prescribed a law against ever swearing an oath. It wasn't just about swearing, like taking God's name in vain. That's a different issue. Not supposed to do that either, right? But swearing an oath was about, you know, raising your hand or putting your hand on a Bible or whatever and saying, I swear. Actually, large parts of the church eventually abandoned this teaching, but one part understood this to be an absolute ban. You can never swear. These were especially on the radical wing of the Reformation, the Mennonites, for example, who believed that it is a violation of Jesus' teaching to ever, like, swear, I solemnly swear, and so they don't. So if you're ever in court and you see somebody say, I affirm, rather than swear, it's an option that was made available in our legal system for people who come from this religious tradition. I've put these two texts back together again today because together they offer a great illustration of a very important theological and ethical theme in the Bible, and that theme is covenant. I want us to think today about covenant. If you don't hear anything else today, hear this. Covenant is probably the most important and central theological and ethical theme in the entire Bible. Covenant. It can help us live our lives and live good lives if we can recover it today. It is a concept that is eroding. I want us to help it not erode, at least not among us. And I believe that covenant is what Jesus had in mind in both of these teachings that we're looking at today. Covenant. It's relevant to all of us. So let's take the oath passage first. It's one that we don't think about as much anymore. Jesus says in Matthew 5:33, "You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, 'You shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you have made to the Lord.'" Old Testament law had an elaborate system for swearing oaths. Two main types. You swore an oath to promise that you were going to do something, or to swear that you were telling the truth. We still have vestiges of that today. You say to your child, "I swear that I will pick you up after school on Friday." Right? Or, "I swear that what I am now saying to you is the absolute truth." Unless you cross your fingers, remember that, right? These two examples, "I swear I will pick you up after school on Friday, on time, and I swear that this time I am telling you the absolute truth," both reveal a problem, don't they? The problem is that you wouldn't really need to swear to something if you were reliable in telling the truth or keeping your promises. We generally only swear to things when our overall reliability is in question. "I've let you down 100 times, but I swear, not crossing my finger, this time I won't." Or, "I've lied to you a lot, but this time I'm telling you the truth." And this is the problem that Jesus had in mind here. Jesus says, I say to you, do not swear at all by anything. Let your yes be yes, let your no be no. In Jesus' time, some religious leaders had constructed an elaborate oath system in which if they swore by one holy thing, it meant more than if they swore by a slightly less holy thing, which meant more than if they swore by something even slightly less holy than that. The system was a recipe for fooling people in the name of God. "I swear by the temple." Hold on, "I just swore by the footstool. That has less binding authority." It was horrible. Jesus says, in that context, just throw all that out and tell the truth all the time, so you never have to swear or never have to deal with these oaths. Let's step back and draw the broader principle. This is what I want to say today, mainly. Human life is built on covenants. Covenants, a fancy word that basically means a sacred agreement between people, and often with God, to behave in a certain way and to maintain a certain kind of a relationship. In the Bible, the word covenant is used repeatedly also to describe the sacred agreement between God and God's people, in which both God and people promise to behave in a certain way and to maintain a certain kind of relationship. If you've read the Bible at all, you've seen it. It was Harriet referred to it earlier, covenant with Noah, covenant with Moses, covenant with David, later covenant with Jesus. There are moments in life, in all of our lives, not just in the Bible, when we make certain promises that really amount to covenants or are explicitly covenantal. The Boy Scouts have a covenantal structure, as far as I can tell. When we join certain other groups, there is also a sacred covenant oath or pledge. And when we get married, if we get married, we make a sacred covenant with this other person. That's me and my wife, 32 years. To behave in a certain way toward this person, to maintain a certain kind of relationship, till death do us part, that's what we promise. Those are all explicit covenants, and they're all very important. And they're really different from other agreements that we make. Like, for example, when we make a contract. When you make a contract to buy a house, it has a certain binding quality to it. Look what happens if you break it, right? But it's not a covenant. It's not a sacred agreement. It usually has all kinds of stipulations around it for getting out of it, and there's often time limits on it and various kinds of provisions to escape. That's not how covenants work. What I think is really going on in Jesus' teaching about oaths is that he is saying that we shouldn't really need to make a sacred oath in order to be counted on to keep our promises or to tell the truth. We should be promise keepers. We should be truth tellers all the time. Others should be able to count on us when we promise things and trust us when we say things that we are telling them the truth. It's interesting that we have to be reminded of this most basic thing. I would suggest that most of the time we live based on an implicit covenantal structure to all of our relationships. It's implicit. It's not written down anywhere. You didn't have a vow ceremony. You don't have to swear it because, for example, you don't have to swear that this time I'm telling the truth or this time I will keep my promise because every time I speak to you, I'm telling the truth. And every time I speak to you or make a promise, I'm going to keep it. I would say that the implicit covenant of promise-keeping and of truth-telling is what makes relationships possible, any relationship. If it were not so, if we did not have an implicit promise of speaking truthfully and keeping covenant, keeping our promises, all of our relationships would quickly deteriorate. You know why that is? Trust is the basis of any relationship. It is exhausting to have to fact-check everything that somebody says to you. You just can't do it. It's impossible. Trust breaks down and relationships end when people don't keep their implicit covenant to tell the truth and keep their promises. So, in language that ought to be familiar to scouts, Jesus says, be trustworthy, honest, and reliable. Make promises that you intend to keep, and then keep them. Let your words be true. Let your character be true. The covenantal structure of human relationships requires it. And I think we get that. Think about if you had a relationship with somebody and they persistently broke their promises or lied to you. How did it go? Now I turn to marriage, which is even more delicate. There are certainly some relationships that are explicitly covenantal, and marriage is one of them. And since Jesus talked about it, we ought to be able to talk about it in church, right? So let's talk about it. I was ordained 30 years ago. And in that 30 years, I've officiated at something like 65 weddings. It's one of my favorite things to do as a minister. One of the things I most value about being asked to do a wedding is I take the opportunity to walk through the vows with the couple. I use it as a teaching time to talk about, and with the couple, about what exactly are you promising to each other today or when you get married? What is the content? What are the words and what do they mean? And are you saying them just because they're pretty and grandma will like it? Or are you saying them because you mean them? Do you know what you're saying? I asked them. Who are you saying it to? Is this a covenant you're making or just kind of, I feel this way today? And I asked myself, is this couple made of stern enough stuff to keep the promises that they are making over a lifetime? A traditional wedding ceremony, which is the only kind that I do, is one of the few places where we actually see someone make an explicit public covenant today. Another rare example is when a public official is sworn into office. A covenant-making ceremony is what linguists call a speech act. You say something, and as you're saying it, you're doing something, and after you do that thing, something new exists that didn't exist before. It's an amazing thing about words. You were a private citizen, and after you say your oath, you are now a senator. You were single, and after you make your covenant, you're now married. You've made a covenant, and the covenant has multiple levels. I say to couples, the covenant is with the person you're marrying, for sure. The covenant is with the community that is witnessing it, and above all, the covenant is with God. And now that you've done it, you are in a different existential reality than you were in before. You're in a new place. This takes us back to Jesus' teaching about divorce. Jesus says, it was said to you, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. And this is still Orthodox Jewish practice. Deuteronomy 24:1 is the basis. What that says is, if there is to be a divorce, it can only be initiated by the man, and he must simply write a certificate of divorce. I divorce you. You are free to marry somebody else. And hand it to his wife on the way out. And that was it. That was the whole practice. And the woman didn't have the equal right. Jesus says in Matthew 19 that he thinks this provision was a concession to the hardness of human hearts. And it's very clear from the first century context that men were abusing the freedom of the certificate of divorce privilege to abandon their wives for no good reason at all. You actually have recorded debates among the rabbis as to whether the fact that she burns your food is sufficient for writing her a certificate of divorce, or whether you find somebody more attractive. So Jesus is having none of it. Jesus was tough. Without using the word covenant, he's appealing to the concept. He limits divorce. He says, men, no, you can't do that. There has to be a really good reason, and the reason he offers is sexual immorality on the part of the spouse. And that was very rare in that time, because especially women's freedom of movement was very constrained, and adultery had the death penalty attached to it. So what he's really saying to the men was, guys, you've made a covenant, and your wife and your children count on that covenant, and you don't get an easy out. Keep your covenant, Jesus was saying. The explicit covenant you made with your wife and the implicit covenant you made when your children were born. All these covenants are made before the eyes of God who sees all. Now, doesn't that make sense today, even if it's uncomfortable to talk about? We rely on the covenant promises, and the more serious the relationship, the more significant the promises. But it gets more complex when we add another wrinkle that has been there because of the human condition. Even a marriage covenant made in all good faith can be strained and finally broken by the behavior of the spouses, one or both of them. This is one reason why I ask my starry-eyed couples who are about to get married to think long and hard about the promises they are making. What does it really mean to love, honor, and cherish somebody? What does in sickness and in health, in richer for poorer, in good times and bad, really mean? I say to my couples, this promise has teeth. Today, you can never imagine a situation in which you might ever consider breaking your promise. But each day, your actions will demonstrate the seriousness with which you intend to keep your covenant. And if you violate the covenant badly enough or often enough, you have the power to end your marriage. But you see, that's true of all covenants. They have an absolute kind of binding quality, and yet our own misconduct can erode and finally destroy them. The covenant of friendship, covenant at a church, the covenant of an organization, and the covenant of a country. Nowadays, the pastors who I know understand that it's not only adultery that can strain a covenant or break it. There's many other things. Abuse is probably the best example. But you know, way back, deep in the centuries of Christian debate about this, the pastors began arguing, what about desertion? Person goes to work and never comes back. That's relevant. What about violence toward children? What about criminal behavior? I had a cousin who married a guy who was a cocaine dealer, it turned out. It's not listed in Matthew 5 or Matthew 19, but it broke the covenant. We have to be able to read Scripture with that kind of broader applicability. So the church has long recognized that on a case-by-case basis, there are times when divorce is tragically necessary. And sometimes when a person initiates a divorce, it's not because they're breaking the covenant, but because their spouse already did. But our goal as Christians is not to adjudicate divorce cases. It's to help people succeed at their marriages or any other covenant that they would make. This is one reason that I am glad that here at our church, we are again starting a marriage enrichment program beginning in March in our First Baptist University program, led by Monique Wischusen, our new counseling center director here. A free marriage enrichment program. You should check it out. March 8th. So the sum of the matter is this. One of the things that Christians do is to keep covenants to the very best of our ability. We keep the implicit covenant to tell the truth, keep our promises, to raise our children well. We keep our explicit covenant, such as the promises we make in marriage. We ask God for help because this work is hard. And we ask for God's forgiveness when we fall short because none of us keep all of our promises. And none of us keep all of our covenants. And God is a God of grace and forgiveness and second chances. All of that is true. Finally, there is our covenant with God. The entire structure of the Old Testament and of Jewish faith is based on covenant. And it's very clear in the Isaiah 56 passage that was read earlier. God had made a covenant with Israel. God would be their God. Israel would be God's people and would follow God's laws. God's promises were many, such as the promise to rise up on behalf of Israel. You get that? All right. There is an alternative religion in this sanctuary this morning. It's called Falcon Mania, let's face it. So God promised to protect or rise up on behalf of Israel. And Israel promised to obey God's will. The good news of Isaiah 56 is that Israel's covenant was not to be based on ethnicity or race. It was open to the stranger, to the foreigner who wanted to covenant with God and be a part of Israel. It was also not about physical perfection because even the eunuch was invited. Everybody who holds fast to the covenant will be God's people. Christianity is explicitly covenantal. But you almost never hear anybody talk about covenant anymore. It feels like some language drawn from the past. But you know, do you remember what Jesus says at the Last Supper? This is the blood of the new covenant. We'll be at the table in just a moment, and we will be reminded again. Christian faith is about a new covenant with God through Jesus, sealed by the blood of Jesus on the cross. It's also made explicit by us when we covenant at baptism, as Jackson Anand did a little while ago. We say, I promise to follow Jesus as Lord of my life. I covenant to do so. As pastor of this church, I have felt strongly led to say, and I think it's true for others who are not part of this church, for Christians, the core of our identity is we are in a covenant relationship with Jesus Christ. And for any congregation, what binds us is nothing less and nothing more than our shared covenant with Jesus Christ. What we have in common is rarely politics, background, socioeconomic status, or football team allegiance until today, the last part. But what we do all have in common is that we are covenanted to follow Jesus. And if we have that, we have all that matters. But we also have to be reminded that that is all that matters. Many people have noted that church attendance and membership in our era has weakened to more like consumer product loyalty. I like this brand for a little while until I like that brand. Somebody might out advertise the church I'm in and attract me. Today you're into Ford, next year you're into Toyota, today whatever. Many people say church is going that way. It is true for some, but it's not what I've seen in this congregation. I've seen people in this congregation who have made a covenant with this church that is about as deep in their bones as any other covenant they have ever made. And that's good. Churches live on the covenantal commitments of their members. It helps you weather storms, good times and bad times. I think the job of any church is to be rooted in that covenant with Christ, committed to the congregation, but then always ready to throw the doors open to strangers who would join the covenant community, like in Isaiah 56. Together at this church, we shall hold fast to our covenant with Jesus, and we will seek to do what he teaches us to do. And then we will invite others to move into the future with us by God's grace.